can use.
Welcome to another episode of The Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and today is November 3rd, 2009, and this is episode 331. Well, we've finished up October and have started to work on November of this year, and it's been a very fascinating year, and I've learned many, many things, both from this program and from life as I live it. One of the most interesting and challenging tasks that I have faced this year had been from my volunteer work with a nonprofit group as we went from applying for 501c status to our first major fundraiser, which I served as the event coordinator for. I now have a great deal of respect for anyone who coordinates a large event. It was a massive challenge, say that the event was a success despite some minor glitches along the way. All of the volunteers did a fantastic job and were much appreciated. Unfortunately, though, the president of the group that I volunteer with was admitted today to the hospital with pneumonia and congestive heart failure. So if everyone could send Harold Delahousse some healing thoughts, it would be much appreciated. His wife, Joan, could probably also use some. When I spoke to her earlier today, she sounded exhausted herself. Dealing with a group of diverse people makes one realize the immense differences in personality, as well as a myriad of ways to cope with stress and the demands of life. Some people are apparently very calm, while others seem to be exploding with nervous activity. Some get a lot done, while others seem to be just making a lot of noise while accomplishing. Some work fast, others seem slow, and yet accomplish far more than the average. What makes these differences? Essentially, we're all given the same basic body, the same basic chemistry, the same basic needs. Exploring ideas such as this leads to lots of questions, and perhaps the guests tonight have written a book that will give us some answers along the way. Please welcome Larry Flaxman and Marie V. Jones, the authors of The Resonance Key, to the program tonight. Marie, could you be so kind as to introduce yourself to the audience?
Oh, boy. I'm Marie V. Jones, and I'm a writer. I've written a number of books. Science about quantum physics and the I've written about supervolcanoes, 2012. I've been studying and researching the paranormal and unknown anomalies for quite a while, and Larry and I recently became partners about 18 months ago and are now working on our third book.
Uh-huh.
How's that?
And Larry.
I mean, I could go on and on, but...
Yeah, I know, but I'm gonna ask you some more questions about that stuff, too. And Larry, would you be so kind as to introduce yourself to the audience?
Sure. My name is Larry Flaxman. I'm a writer. I am 5'10", 150 pounds. I am a Capricorn.
Are you single, too?
I'm not single, unfortunately. I have a
unfortunately,
daughter.
Now your wife is going to be getting you.
Yeah, really? You shouldn't have said that, Larry.
Shouldn't have said what?
But unfortunately.
Oh. So, yeah.
All the wives are sitting here laughing now.
Well, we have to start this off on a little bit of a humorous note. So.
Yeah.
No, but I'm a writer. I also run one of the largest paranormal investigation groups in the country, RPAST. RPAST.org is a website. Marie and I have teamed up together to do a tour de force that we're calling Para Explorers. So we have some joint projects that we're doing, and of course our books. So that's me.
Okay. Well, so if you guys were going to capsulize The Resonance Key into a nutshell, it wouldn't fit, first of all. It'd be like those books with the first New Testament written on a symbol or whatever. But, you know, if you were going to say just one sentence about the book, what would you say it's about?
I forgot the link. Oh, can you hear? I think we can't hear each other. I would say it's about the links between vibration and frequency and the structure of reality and how our consciousness fits into that picture. How about you, Larry?
And Larry, how would you do it?
I would say it's about sound and resonance and vibratory frequency and how it all relates and how consciousness is an integral part of all of that.
You know, when we talk about vibrations, okay, the first vibration that comes to my mind is the vibration you feel when a car with a lot of bass goes boom, 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 boom down the road past your house at 4 a.m. You know, and recently that's an annoying vibration.
An annoying vibration.
You know, I was reading an article in the last year or so, and it talked about, you know, in clubs where they have the loud music and the incredible bass and stuff, that it could actually go so far as to induce a heart attack. I mean, that's carrying vibration, you know, I guess to a new level. Most of us didn't realize that things could actually have a physical effect on us. So, you know, do sounds at a lower level than, you know, really incredibly loud music have an effect on us as well?
Both of them.
I was just going to say.
Go ahead.
Yeah, very much. If you think about back in the 80s, for those of us that are 80s children, if you remember the old Memorex commercials where they had the Is It Memorex or Is It Live, where they showed a speaker that was playing in front of a crystal glass and they were able to shatter the glass using sound, using frequency. That's absolutely true. And that's a very legitimate example of what sound can do. So if you could shatter glass, and as we wrote about in our book, they've actually designed a sonic jackhammer where they use sound to break up rocks. You know, if you could break up such things as that, absolutely you could do some serious damage to the human body. There's if any of your readers or any of your listeners are big, what do they call it, the car stereo competition people, they're real big into what's called SPL, sound pressure level. Part of that, what they try to do is they try to have, you would think that it's how loud the music actually is, but it's really not. It's how low the music is. In other words, how low that their subwoofers can reproduce. And I've actually been in a vehicle that was a competition vehicle like that, and this guy had, I think, 20 18-inch subwoofers in the back of an S10. You sit in this thing and you turn it up and you don't hear music. All you do is basically feel the vibration. And I sat in that thing for, you know, less than 30 seconds before I had to get out because I felt like I was about to puke from it. I mean, you feel your guts and everything vibrating. So vibration and sound has very significant physiological effects on the human body. Our body is primarily water. And if you think about, you know, vibrating a glass, you know, that's filled with water, what happens to that? Well, it vibrates and vibrates until the water probably comes spilling out of the glass or the glass breaks. Same thing with the human body. You subject the human body to high levels of resonance or sound like that, and you have problems too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, I also remember reading something at some point, you know, one of those millions of articles that you're reading a year or a decade or however long, that there was actually a sound cannon being worked on or had been developed in terms of use for military purposes.
We wrote a lot about the military's use of resonance and sound, and there's Larry could probably talk more about the sound cannon, but LRAD is something that is being used. In fact, it was just used here in San Diego a couple of weeks ago. It's a long-range acoustic device. It blasts out very high-frequency beams of sound, very high decibel, and it's to pretty much suppress or quell riots and crowds and, you know, literally damage people without killing them. So basically, the military and law enforcement are already using it. Now, the sound cannon, Larry may know a little bit more about.
My 3-year-old daughter is a perfect, I was going to say my 3-year-old daughter is a perfect example of a sound weapon at times.
Oh, my God.
I can give you recorded clips of that if you're interested.
No, that's okay. I'll pass.
But it's like going to an alarm clock, you know?
I need an alarm clock.
And they're so loud that you can't even enjoy the music. I mean, it's making you sick.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Are you talking about my daughter again, Marie?
No. She's adorable. But yeah, I think
use an alarm clock that goes off at 120 decibels, okay?
Oh, my God.
It's not even in the bedroom. It's not even in the bedroom. I keep it in the hallway, and it's because I have insomnia, and sometimes I go to sleep an hour or two before I need to get up.
Oh, that's
Therefore, cool. I have got to have something that's going to wake me up. And
I've got something you want to check into. I read about this the other day I think it was on ThinkGeek or one of the other websites. It's an alarm clock that's motorized. It has these wheels on the bottom of it. And when the alarm goes off, it goes scurrying off the table and, like, runs across the room so you can't catch it, forcing you to actually get up and chase it to turn your alarm off. No, seriously.
I have a 65-pound retrieving monster in the bedroom with me. If it goes scurrying off the table and across the floor, she's going to eat it.
There you go. There you go.
That would probably be like hitting the sleep button, I guess.
Yeah, she goes after a regular electric alarm clock even. She does not like alarm clocks at all. In fact, when I first was, my daughter actually gave me that lovely thing. It's called the Screaming Meanie, and it's a countdown alarm and battery operated, and it does. It goes off at 120 decibels. When I first got it, I wasn't sure if the alarm woke me up or the fact that the 65-pound dog went airborne when it went off. You know, you have a dog suddenly leap up on the bed and then land on the bed, and there's noise is going off, and oh yeah, you woke up. You woke up, yeah. And everybody complained about it. In fact, I did live in an apartment complex briefly about 6 years ago, and my neighbors complained about it. You can hear it through apartment walls.
You woke them up too.
Yeah. So, there are applications, I guess, for loud sounds. But that particular alarm clock has never won me friends. Other than my bosses. My bosses like it because I'm not late, you know. But, yeah. It is very, very loud. And you really can't think while you're turning it off. In fact, I always lose the battery cover within a week or two of buying a new one because there are times when you push the buttons in wrong sequence, and then it won't shut off.
Oh, God.
And the only way to shut it up is to pull out the battery.
Out the window it would go.
Oh, I just let the battery off and that, or the battery cover off, and then, you know, when I did that, all I had to do was pop the battery out. But, yeah, that was my answer to it. But it does wake you up. Sometimes shaking. Yeah.
But not sure.
Yeah, but... You know, another thing that people frequently will bring up when we talk about sound vibrations is the biblical story of Joshua and the trumpet.
Joshua and
the trumpet. And, you know, how would that be possible? I think it was Joshua and the trumpet. The guy with the trumpet in the Bible that marched around the city until the walls fell down.
Huh. I'm not a big...
You never heard that story?
I've got to say... Being that that must be King James or something, because I'm not familiar with that story, to be honest with you.
I'm thinking it's the Old Testament.
It sounds like a similar take on the Pied Piper using sound to enchant or destroy.
It's Jericho.
The walls of Jericho. Okay, now
I had to do the Google search for it. It is King James. Yeah. Book of Joshua 6. I am not familiar with that, so...
But yeah, I mean, we wrote about how there is a theory, and I'm not sure, you know, how many people support it, but there is a theory that the big blocks that made up the pyramid could have been moved with sonic levitation. Finding just the exact resonant frequency of the block and, you know, using music or chanting or drumming or some kind of sound to do that, and then being able to manipulate the large piece of block. And sonic levitation is something that has been proven to work with really small objects. I think we've succeeded in levitating a mouse and a frog. I'm not sure about big stone block, but the theory is certainly something people are looking at.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, levitating through sound would be, you know, it was certainly, if it became commonplace, you know, imagine a shipyard instead of having cranes unloading these huge shipping containers off the ships, it would
hum.
Be sound.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, if you're finding the right frequency, it you're finding the vibratory rate of that big block of stone. And once you do that, you should be able to somehow manipulate. Now, I don't know how they did that, but again, in theory, and that would make sense. You know, the wall of Jericho could have come tumbling down because, was it Joshua? Or was it Joshua that you said in the story?
I think it was Joshua and the walls of Jericho, but,
okay.
You know, again, I'm not a biblical scholar.
Joshua, all those names. But he blew the trumpet at just the right resonant note that corresponded with the resonant frequency of the wall. I mean, maybe that was it.
And marched around the city and with the trumpet and the walls of Jericho fell down.
Hmm.
You know, there's been a lot of theories put forth that they, you know, marching in
back in unison, yeah.
That they
right.
could actually create that sort of vibration.
Exactly.
You know, there's also talking to people that are, you know, investigating alien abductions, they talk about, you know, how people are transported to and from the location of the event, wherever it is, and that sometimes that they're, the abductee's vibrational frequency is altered to allow them to pass through solid objects, or that the aliens can do that because they're altering the vibrational sequence of the walls or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is something like that possible?
Well, I mean, Larry, what do you think?
Well, I mean, okay, without having to break out the tinfoil hat and actually, you know, talking about the conspiracy or conspiratorial aspect of that, I mean, certainly it's possible. I mean, as we wrote about in the book, everything has a vibratory frequency. Everything vibrates. Even the most solid object, you know, the table that your equipment is sitting on, is not actually solid. If you looked at that table at the quantum level, you would see that it's vibrating, that there is lots of little tiny pieces of it and little things vibrating around. And theoretically, you could disturb that pattern somehow with a different frequency or a different resonant tone or signal. So I don't think there's anything that in traditional science that would say that it's not possible. But, you know, again, is there any proof of that? Well, no.
Well, yeah,
not
we
really.
Just haven't figured out how to do that.
When I think about it, you know, okay, altering, if somebody was going to alter my frequency and the wall's frequency so that I could pass through the wall, how do I know I'm not going to end up with wood inside of me, you know?
You might not.
I'm not getting it.
Well, I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean, imagine getting stuck, you know, stuck partway. I mean, that's like, you know, weird.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do that. Or you come out the other side and you're totally disassembled and...
Yeah.
No. But, you know, in theory,
actually, there was a Star Trek episode of that. Marie, did you ever watch that Star Trek episode?
I watched the originals with William Shatner.
No, I did too. No, it was one of the originals. I did too. What? I did too.
Okay.
We're not that much different in age. But,
okay.
No, there was an episode where the transporter malfunctioned or something, and it scrambled their particles when when they transported back.
I vaguely remember. And, yeah, you know, that's one of the problems that we would be dealing with if we were trying to do that in a laboratory and can't figure out how to keep the frequencies consistent as you're passing through the wall. And then, of course, on the other side, how do you get back to the way you were, to the vibratory level you were at as a human form?
Yeah, I mean, you know... It's kind of scary. Would you want to be the first one to do that experiment?
No. No. Isn't there something like that, Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, where he, doesn't he, like, teleport into a TV show, only he's not quite right? I kind of vaguely remember that, too, with Johnny Depp. Anyway, But yeah, I mean, that's one of the risks that you take. But again, I mean, theoretically, we should be able to figure out someday how to do that. If nothing is solid, then you should be able to pass something through those little gaps that are in between the particles. If you can just find the right frequency, find the right pattern that will pass through the gaps and not hit the particles themselves.
Yeah,
that's
you know, it is, because once you reduce things to a vibrational frequency, you know, what's to prevent you from literally sending things by wire?
Right.
I mean, things by wire. And then the vibrational frequency is just recreated on the other end, and voila, you've got Red Dog sitting in your living room instead of laying beside me on the floor.
Well, what I've always
wondered
is, if we're all vibrating, if we're all made up of vibrating particles, and what knows to keep us vibrating at the rate of a human being rather than a German Shepherd? You know, something has to know to keep the particles so close together, or, you know, vibrating at such a rate that we look like a human form and not something else. Is that the, you know, DNA or our
And so that we don't, I mean, when I'm touching the table, that doesn't alter my vibrational frequency or the table's.
Right, exactly.
Yet, you know, we can't be that far apart in our vibrational frequency, because we both exist in this reality.
Mm-hmm.
Or do we?
So there are limitations.
Pardon?
There are limitations, you know, unfortunately.
There are limitations.
Yeah. Our minds can go...
Yeah, because because when we touch another object, I mean, if you put a loud speaker by me, I'm going to feel the vibrations of that speaker going through me.
Right.
You know, is that how we feel someone when they walk into the room with us? Is their vibrational frequency sending out little ripples in the pond?
I think sometimes somebody walks into a room or you meet someone and you resonate with them, and sometimes you're repelled, you're repulsed.
When you meet somebody, think about the realistic aspect of that. I mean, I think what Maria is saying is absolutely true. When you meet someone, think about the very first time that you meet someone, before you actually even hold a conversation with them. The first, you know, 5 or 10 seconds that you're in that person's presence, without words even being exchanged, you generally form an opinion of whether you like that person or not, whether that you get a good vibe from that person, a bad vibe. There's there's something that is occurring. It's kind of like a two-way communication protocol that happens, where there's some type of a connective energy or connective link that's occurring with that person, where you automatically you just know without even having to communicate with them. I mean, that to me that says a lot.
And with some people,
I have to admit, I call them the refrigerator people. You know, because they have the vibrational frequency or interest of a refrigerator. I mean, literally, they're there, but they have apparently no relevance to your frequency, I guess. Because I'm bad about, when I meet people, I know right away, do I like them or not like them? It's instant, before they even open their mouth.
Right, exactly.
And over time, I've learned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, over time, I've learned.
What that is.
Nope, I have no idea. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with the way they look, the way they smell, the way they're dressed, where we are, anything. I instantly like or don't like.
Right.
And I think most people are like that. Most people are like that. Whether they want to admit it or not, most people are like that.
Yeah, well, I think it's part of being human. It's the part we ignore. We often ignore that sort of first instinctual impression where we're feeling the vibe of someone. I mean, how many times do you get a bad vibe about someone, but you continue, you know, maybe you go into business with them anyway, or you sign your mortgage over with them, and you know, we override it so easily.
And then you learn. You should listen to that first instinct, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that's been true for me. I should have listened. You know, when that red flag went up, did I pay attention? If not, I'm probably going to regret it. You know, yeah. So, Yeah, and it is interesting to think of everybody being a vibration and everything being a vibration. How do you think that's going to affect the development of technology to actually realize that everything is vibration? Are you there? Hello?
Jim?
Yes.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Okay, I hear Larry, but does Marie hear either one of us? Well, apparently we're having some technical issues here.
Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Once again, I'd like to remind everyone to visit the website, www.exogenynetwork.com. You can sign up for the newsletter, wander around, explore the website, and let me know what you think of it. There are links there to take you to blogs, Twitter, and even Facebook. If you have a question you wish to have asked, you can email it to me at jewiscott@gmail.com. I'll be monitoring the email during the program with Marie B. Jones and Larry Flaxman tonight. I'm trying real hard not to miss anything. If you're in the virtual auditorium in Pal Talk, you can also send it to me in text. Now, Marie and Larry, before we start on any topic at all, do please tell the audience once again about your websites and where to get your books. And so, Larry, we're going to let you go first this time.
Okay. Well, our joint website is www.paraexplorers.com. That's paraexplorers.com. My website is rpast, www.rpast.org. You can purchase our books from pretty much any place, brick and mortar stores like Books a Million, Barnes & Noble, Borders, or you can purchase them online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera.
What's my saying, Larry?
Do what?
Available wherever fine books are sold.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, there's that line. And you guys are fairly easy to find online, and also anybody who's having any trouble, if you go to Exogeny Network, there's a page there for Larry and Marie as well. So, while we're on a rather abrupt break there, we're talking a little bit about some of the more positive things. We haven't really talked about the positive uses for the sound vibrations, resonance, you know, whatever you want to call it. You know, what are some of the more positive things, the positive ways that, you know, potentially we could be using it?
There's a lot
of. We could be using resonance or sound or what? What exactly? I don't understand.
Well, both. I was
you know, the vibrations. You know, the sound really is nothing more than vibrations.
Well,
yeah, there's a lot of ears. Oh, go ahead.
There's been a lot of, I guess you'd say, homegrown research that's been done into the use of resonant frequencies to treat various ailments. There was a gentleman by the name of Royal Raymond Rife who designed a device called the, he named it after himself, the Rife Generation, or Rife Generator, that basically would, his theory was that diseases of the body had a specific resonant frequency, and that if you could target those resonant frequencies, that you could destroy everything that ailed your body. So he designed basically a high-frequency RF generator that you hooked up the probes to your body and fired the thing up, and it would kill basically all the bad stuff that was in your body. There's research that's continued on with that. There's a lady by the name of Hulda Clark that has continued doing research into that, and she's designed a series of tools called zappers, which are basically the same thing, but rather than using a different targeting frequency, she only uses one or two frequencies. So they've used resonant frequencies, and they've used frequency certainly for that. And people that I've spoken with that have used those devices have had nothing but positive things to say about that. There's also been a lot of research and a lot of work that's been done within the field of brainwave entrainment, which for the folks that are into NLP or neuro-linguistic programming are probably familiar with that, where they use sound and light in combination basically to entrain your brain or to cause you to experience a variety of effects, whether it is relaxation. I actually have a light and sound machine which is using that entrainment modality. But it will entrain both sides of your brain, basically synchronize both sides of your brain so that you can go into deep states of consciousness, you can relax a lot easier, you can have all kinds of weird hypnagogic visual imagery that occurs, things like that. There's been a lot of research that's been done in that too. So the positive aspects, you know, of that, you know, certainly you could include all of the advances in technology that include, you know, frequencies and wavelengths, wireless internet, you know, Wi-Fi and WiMAX and all those things are a product of frequency. Our cell phones that we carry every day, we wouldn't have those if research hadn't been done into frequency transmission, et cetera. So, you know, everything it seems like nowadays, it's most of the positives, I would say there probably are more positive things that have come out of the research of sound and resonant frequencies than the negatives. It's unfortunate that you hear more about the negatives in the news media, the weaponry and such that people are using. But really, there's probably much, much more good things that have been done.
Now, here's a question for you. Have you ever used these devices to improve your health yourself?
I have. Yes, I have a Zapper device. I've played with that fairly extensively. And, you know, I can't pretend to I understand the science of how it works, but I can't completely pretend to understand why exactly it works. I mean, how it's able to target specifically the viruses and the bacteria in the body the way that it does. I would think, you know, for me, my scientific side would kick in and say, well, why is it not destroying positive things in your body as well, such as the flora that exists in your gut, within your stomach? You know, why is it not destroying those, but it's targeting all of the supposed bad stuff? But I can definitely say when I've used the Zapper device, I have definitely experienced shorter periods of sickness, which, you know, whether that's a product of a psychosomatic thing, you know, whether I believe that it helped, so it helped, or whether it really did, I really can't speak to that, but it certainly did help. As far as using the brainwave entrainment device, the light and sound machine that I've had, it certainly has helped me with relaxing, and I probably need to start using it again. But the times that I've used it, certainly I got a much better sleep at night. I was much better focused the next day. I was able to achieve much more of the delta state sleep than I normally would be able to achieve.
Oh, maybe I should get myself one of those machines. I've battled insomnia.
Sounds good.
My whole life. Since childhood, actually. So.
Oh, I do too. Yeah, I'm a childhood insomniac too. I have still yet to find a cure.
Well, you know, everybody says, well, go to the doctor. I have been to every doctor under the sun. And they can't even really.
Yeah.
Well, I found that the medication makes it worse.
It does, and it makes
Because I don't have trouble falling asleep. Well, I don't have trouble falling asleep. I just don't stay asleep.
Right, exactly.
And if I don't stay and if I do stay asleep, I tend to walk in my sleep.
Oh,
and walking in your sleep is bad enough, but I'm told that the reason you walk in your sleep is a switch in your brain that's supposed to flip when you're asleep to keep you from acting out your dreams.
Right.
That when you're sleepwalking, mind doesn't flip.
Oh, boy.
But unfortunately, sometimes in the middle of the sleepwalking, it flips, and then you fall.
Oh, boy.
And falling last year, let's see, one time I fell, I hit the trash can on the side of my neck. And that didn't, you know, I wasn't ever seriously injured, but that particular one left me with my neck frozen in an excruciating pain. That was not nice. It took several trips. And at first, I couldn't remember what I'd done. And the chiropractor was, like, you know, really concerned, because if I hadn't injured myself, to have this problem was a bad thing. And then I finally, you know, I think between the first and second visit, I remembered, oh, yeah, I fell, and I hit the trash can that way. And that's what I'd done. But, you know, sleepwalking sounds like a very innocuous thing, but, you know, I did. I hurt myself pretty good, and lots of bruises and minor skins and scrapes. And it could have been much worse. I could have fallen, you know, could live someplace where I had stairs
right
I'd fall
upstairs,
down.
Yeah.
You know, and things like that. And I can only imagine, you know, what it's like for someone who does live in a two- or three-story house, what could potentially happen, because I don't even stay indoors. Now, here where I live, it happens to be moderately safe. I have lots of locked gates that I require getting keys out
to the road.
Right, you know, so I'm not apt to run into trouble here, you know, but there were times when, you know, I was younger that I lived in the country, and it might, you know, this sounds silly, but my biggest fear was that I was going to go sleepwalking and take my daughter when she was a baby and then leave her someplace.
Oh, gosh.
And not know where I left her, which sounds really stupid. I mean, it's a first-time mother sort of fear. But, yeah, you know, it was, you know, if something like that sleep zapper that he was talking about would make you sleep better, you know, I should have had this. You know,
years ago.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to check out that particular machine and see if something like that would be an answer for me, because, like I said, the sleeping pills, unfortunately, a side effect is often sleepwalking, which just makes
scary.
It much worse.
I have one that causes hallucinations, and last time I took it, I thought I was going insane, and it didn't make me sleep. It was a horse pill, but it was gigantic. So no.
I just have not found where they are particularly effective to me. They just leave me feeling hungover and yucky the next day.
I just
and,
more, you know, I figure if I'm up, I might as well do something constructive. So I'll read or I'll do some work, and eventually I'll go to sleep. But.
Yeah, I get up and hung up an hour or two.
Yeah, I
found some of the best ways to relax before you go to bed. And what really puts me to sleep is read about sports. You know, pick up a copy of Sports Illustrated, try to get into
Oh, Lord.
And then literally, you know, I'll get two pages into it, and I'm out like a light every time. Yeah, I mean, it's
see,
the cheapest
I love sports.
Sleep therapy that I could recommend.
I used to read geological reports, okay? You ought to really put yourself to sleep. Geological reports, even if you love geology, it's written so dry.
It's ridiculous.
You know, it's just really, I mean,
I
got to agree
with you on that. I mean, call me a geo nerd, but I think I would much rather read that stuff than Sports Illustrated.
Than Sports Illustrated.
Unless it's the swimsuit edition. Now, maybe that would
be a little
bit
different. Oh, of course, Larry, but that would keep you up there.
But for the most part, Sports Illustrated, no, you give me Sports Illustrated, I read a chapter, and I'm out like a light. So.
How about golf? That would be good.
What do you mean, Marie?
Golf Digest. The Golf Magazine.
Yeah, that's another one. Golf Jog.
That
yeah, that's
good,
actually
yeah.
my backup.
Golf Digest, yes.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing that bores me to tears is TV, but, you know, it didn't ever put me to sleep. It just bored me. And then I'd go do something and forget I was supposed to be watching it.
We're coming up
with
some solutions for insomnia here. Put on the channel. That'll knock you out.
I have always kept craft and art supplies, and that was my 2 o'clock in the morning thing. And I could, I'm going to mix, blah. And that was, you know, if I'm going to be up, I may as well do something
exactly.
constructive or creative.
Do something
yeah.
constructive.
Right.
I come up with
well,
my
for
best
years.
Ideas at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, the doctors told me.
Illustrated. Just let me know.
Well, the doctors told me don't read in bed, don't have a clock in the bedroom.
Sure.
Let's see what else. If you lay there and you don't go to sleep in 15 minutes, get up.
That's the beauty of my sleep therapy. You don't even really have to read. You lay the magazine down, you see a picture of A-Rod hitting a home run, and bang, you're out like a light.
But I think he's cute. That would keep me up.
No.
But yeah, I mean, if you're going to have insomnia, do what I do. Make it productive. I've written
yeah.
a lot of things in the throes of insomnia.
Yeah, I've written a lot of stuff in the 2 a.m. 2 a.m. is a good creative hour.
It is.
You
it
know,
is. And actually, yeah. A lot of people I know, they say they wake up at 2 a.m. and that is their best creative stuff comes at that time for some reason. So there's something.
Well, you know, years ago I was talking to a coworker and I said, you know, why is it that we have these great ideas? And I think I said between 1 and 4 a.m. And here's the answer to the 1 and 4 a.m. thing was everybody, you know, most of the world in your area is asleep. Their thoughts are not inhibiting your thoughts.
Oh, huh, that's interesting.
That's an interesting.
And I thought, well, you
yeah.
know,
it really is. Yeah, your thoughts. It's you. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, and I thought, well, you know, that could very well be. I mean, our thoughts are done by electromagnetic pulses, which obviously are some form of vibration too.
Mm-hmm,
so
yeah.
why couldn't you know, even if you're not going as far as psychic connections and reading each other's thoughts, you know, maybe their vibrations are inhibiting yours, your creative
right.
vibrations.
Well,
maybe.
The right brain tends to take over, too, at night because there's not a lot of stimulus, there's not a lot of information for the left brain to process. So the creative right brain, it gets a chance to speak out.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do have a question from the virtual auditorium, and they want to know, is there a frequency that one can use to contact extraterrestrials, or
oh
have you heard rumors of such?
I have never heard such a thing. 1-800-ET, I don't know.
Yeah.
There may be, I mean, but I would think each extraterrestrial civilization would have their own, you know, the Earth has its own resonant frequencies. Maybe other planets do as well, but I've never heard of anything like that.
Okay, that makes sense to me. So, don't have an answer for you on that.
No,
so
if that person finds it, I'd love to hear it, because I'd love to make contact.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't it be interesting to have a chance to sit down and have a conversation with an extraterrestrial?
Yeah. Figure out
you
what
know, them.
Bandwidth they're using, and
what it
or even you know,
sleep at night.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe they don't sleep at night, or maybe they hang like bats from a railing and yeah, you know, and sleep.
I'm sure there's some sort of an extraterrestrial version of Sports Illustrated.
Oh, geez, here we go.
It's probably Earth Illustrated, okay?
Larry, you're not ever going to pick up an endorsement from Sports Illustrated now. You blew it.
Well, you know, that's okay. I've sort of resigned myself to that fact.
Have you? Okay.
Yeah.
You're never going to make front cover either, you know. Yeah. maybe you should explore the effects of sound waves on sports performance.
Ah, there you go.
You know, is that why cheering and clapping seems to inspire athletes to perform better?
Just them on, yeah. Yeah. And booing.
Well, psychologically, obviously, there is a connection.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
If you're booing your favorite player, he's going to do crappy compared with, you know, if you're cheering him on. There is some type of obvious...
emotionally. Sure.
Yeah. There's a definite conscious connection to that. That would be an interesting study, though, to see if there was, you know, like an optimal frequency that they would be, that, you know, that they could entrain their body somehow to.
I actually read, too, that one of the reasons why people at football games get so charged up, especially high school and college, is because of the marching bands. There's so much rhythmic stuff going on, and it's loud, and, you know, and I love marching bands. I can hear the high school one next to me almost every day practicing, and, you know, that kind of gets you revved up. So it is affecting you on a physiological level. It also gets you revved up emotionally and mentally.
Well, okay, this is going to sound really crazy, but one of the things that I used to use when I was doing really boring, repetitive things like painting fences or washing gazillion windows is I'd put on Scottish bagpipe marches. My neighbors hated me, by the way.
What about Scottish bagpipe dancers or
that's what I would play when I was doing boring rhythmic things like painting fences or washing gazillion windows. You know, where you're doing the same motion over and over and over. Your arm would get so tired, but when you play that kind of music, it seems to reduce the fatigue, which is what they were developed to do. You know, these marching.
Exactly.
So does that rhythm, that vibration, that, you know, certain beat, does that actually have a physiological effect on us?
Oh, absolutely. That's why certain people resonate to certain types of music. Some people can... when my son was a baby, well, he was about 2 or 3 years old, we used to play Rammstein, which is the loudest techno heavy rock you can imagine. And he would fall asleep. And my ex-husband and I, every night, it's like, get put on the Rammstein, and boom, he'd be out like a light. But if you played classical music, he would... We all sort of resonate to different types of music, different rhythms, different beats. And it puts you in a trance, too. I mean, the bagpipes put you in a trance when I hear them. It's not a trance that I really enjoy, but they just have that quality where it sort of lifts your mind out of your present state of awareness a little bit.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. And I would say, you know, for me, I guess the one that would put me into that state would be the theme song from Leave It to Beaver.
What puts you in a good state?
Yeah, the deep, relaxed, you know, where I can actually work.
Well, because it reminds you of childhood. And
well, I don't know.
It reminds you of good times when you were a child. If something reminds you of being a child and, you know, if you had a good childhood.
You totally took that too serious. I was completely joking.
Well, hey, I like that Dream of Jeannie song. It puts, actually, what gets me calm is the Bewitched theme. Because I used to watch that every day when I came home from school. So if I hear that, I feel Bewitched.
Oh, yeah.
So I have an association with that song. My body will react to it. I'll get really calm and feel really comfortable.
Do you like wrinkle your nose and everything?
What did you say?
Marie, when you hear that, do you like automatically wrinkle your nose?
My nose wrinkles.
Yep.
And the cat goes flying across the room. Music is sound and resonance and vibration and frequency. So I think, we're all going to react to it.
Like in elevators and whatnot, they tend to play, you know, music. They take songs and they dumb them down, I guess. That's the only way to put it. And, you know, they do the same sorts of things in grocery stores and all sorts of stores.
Elevators.
You know, there was
music that they play in the elevators.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, torture. Okay, right there. But there have been a few stores, chains, that I don't know what they were playing, but it would make me physically ill after being in there a few minutes. And for about 10 years, they used it. This is back in the late 70s, early 80s. And, you know, so all the people in my family, you couldn't hear anything. But he would start feeling sick shortly after going into the store. And he never stayed very long. You know, and what kind of a sound could they have had? You know, I used to say it's got to be like the ventilation system or something that's irritating us. Because I'd get a headache and I'd start feeling sick. And that was the same thing that I would hear from other people. And, you know, is there sounds that typically you wouldn't notice, but would do that have that sort of effect on you?
I didn't hear a word of that.
Well,
you didn't hear a word of that.
I'm kind of hoping Marie would answer that. Honestly, I couldn't hear a single word that you said.
I know, it completely cut out. Say it again. I can hear you now.
Okay, for about a decade, there was a chain that had some sort of sound, whether it was from the ventilation system or something that were deliberately playing. You didn't notice it. But when I would walk into the store, along with a number of other family members, about half of us in the group would get a headache and start feeling nauseous and whatnot. We'd want to leave. We'd leave right away. You know, yet at the same time, we didn't hear anything.
Right.
Is there types of sounds that can have that sort of effect on people? Maybe it was just part of the population?
Right.
You know,
infrasound.
Just about all of us, for the most part, are physiologically receptive to especially low-frequency waves. You know, I would venture to guess that most of us have been the unfortunate receivers of drive-by basing. That is, when someone drives by you with their windows rolled down in their car and the bass just absolutely cranked up to Mach 10, okay. And they probably you know, blasted you in your car and knocked something off your shelf at home. You know, you felt that more than likely. If they were close enough, you could actually physically feel that, you know, within your gut, very much like I did in that car stereo vehicle. Interestingly enough, a lot of what I think we consider to be paranormal may actually be explained by resonance and sound. There is a gentleman by the name of Vic Tandy. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, but I actually had the honor of conversing with him before he passed away. Vic Tandy was an engineer. He worked at Coventry University in England, and he was an avid fencer. For those in the U.S., most of us don't know what fencing is, but fencing is the sport of fighting with swords. Well, one night he was working down in his lab at Oxford, down in the basement, and he had his fencing foil, which is just a fancy name for his sword, clamped in a vise. And he was trying to straighten the sword. He had been sword fighting earlier, and the sword had gotten bent. He had it clamped in a vise, and he was walking over to it, and out of the corner of his eye, he saw a black mass move from behind him, basically. He experienced what those of us in the paranormal community would refer to as a shadow figure. He saw an object moving that he believed to be, you know, of paranormal nature. So he stopped for a second. It happened again. He saw movement out of the corner of his eye, and when he would turn to look, there was nothing there. Well, upon further investigation, what he was able to determine, he was a huge skeptic, so he really wasn't a very big proponent of paranormal initially, but that kind of launched his career into debunking things, into researching the paranormal. But what he was able to find was that the fencing foil that was locked in the vise was directly underneath an air conditioning vent, and they had done some maintenance in the building prior to that, and the air was actually now working. And what was occurring was when the air conditioner kicked on, it was basically vibrating the foil, the fencing foil, in a manner that was creating a standing wave in the room. It was creating a 19 hertz? I can't remember, Marie. Do you remember?
No, I think it's 19. That's like the ghost frequency.
I think it was a 19, that was it. It created a 19 hertz standing wave in the room. And if you know anything about the physics of sound, a standing wave basically increases exponentially as it picks up space in the room. So what was occurring from a physiological perspective was the fencing foil was vibrating very minutely. You couldn't really see it, but it was creating what's called an infrasonic wave that was in the room. The infrasonic wave at 19 hertz, it was later determined, was actually vibrating the liquid within his eyeball. So he wasn't actually experiencing a paranormal event. What was occurring was a very obvious physiological change was occurring, that of the the sound, the resonance, was vibrating the liquid within his eyeball. So he was not cognizant of that at the time. He actually believed that he was experiencing a paranormal event, but really what was occurring was the sound was causing him to see things. So I think there are very obvious examples like that. There's been, you know, throughout our research with our past, we found very, you know, very similar findings. There are physiological things that occur within the human body due to sound that we don't have any control over, that just happen, that probably could be explain a tremendous amount of what we consider to be unknown.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because then you have to question, you know, how many other paranormal events could be explained by something as simple as that.
Right.
Absolutely.
Our brains that are triggering them because of a certain sound frequency.
It may seem very real to us, and in a sense it is real to us, but it's not really, there is a very common sense explanation for it if you actually look into the science behind things. And I think a huge amount of what we consider to be supernatural or paranormal really may be completely normal. It just may be constructs of physiology or things that we don't or have not, until this point, completely researched.
Well, you know, I have a mental file, and it's getting fatter the older I get, and it's all the weird stuff file, and it's things that I can't explain. I'm not sure what it was. I just can't explain it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things not unlike that. One time I saw what appeared to be a black cat jump through the window, complete with the curtain moving, and run under the bed. The only problem was the window was closed. Okay? I went so far as I was married at the time, and my husband come in, and we tore that room apart looking for this cat that had gotten through the window. There was no cat. And it was impossible for it to come through the window. And I knew that the window was closed. So I went and checked to make sure that it was, in fact, closed, although I couldn't figure out how a cat got that high. But I still searched the bedroom looking for the cat because the cat looked that real.
Really?
But, you know, it was not a cat. There was no cat there.
Yeah.
I have probably hundreds or maybe thousands of things not unlike that.
It didn't happen to look like a grinning Cheshire cat by any chance, did it?
No, it was a very normal-looking, scrawny black cat is what I saw jump through the window.
Oh, okay.
And like I said, complete with the curtain moving, it looked like a real cat. And, you know, daytime, you know, it wasn't like I was in, you know, there's nights when you got the heebie-jeebies and you know your imaginations have to run away with you.
Right.
It was daytime,
gotcha.
Just come in from hiking. You know, I didn't have any weird stuff on my mind at all. I was tired, and it was cold out, and I was changing my clothes when I saw this cat jump through the window. And, you know, there again, it was just one of those things you just file away in your weird file and say, I don't know what I saw, but, you know, it was as clear as if it had really happened.
You know,
and I know there was no way.
A really interesting thing that the book that we're writing now that I learned is that more people experience deja vu, sleep paralysis, and any other number of unusual anomalies when they're exhausted. And I know, you know, for me, I do experience sleep paralysis. If I'm really, really exhausted, I can almost tell that night I'm going to have sleep paralysis. But even deja vu, something happens to the brain when you're tired and exhausted. It's like certain parts shut down. And other parts have to compensate for it. And for some reason, it...
Well, I have been tired enough that I have actually hallucinated.
Yeah.
I think that occurs at like 48 hours or so is about when I'll start hallucinating.
It's like all of the good parts of us, the parts that can drive and walk and function, shut down, and everything else gets to come out and play.
Scary thing is the most profound hallucination episode I ever had, I was driving.
Ooh,
and I was on the last 50 miles home. Yeah. I saw it was a hump of dirt. I knew it was a hump of dirt because I knew this couldn't be real. It looked, if you ever saw, there was a program on HBO way back in the 80s, and they had a thing on there called Trash Heap. It was this face made of trash and, you know, talk and whatnot. It was on some little... So I think it was called Trash Heap. It might have been on, like, Fraggle Rock or something like that. But it was on HBO. Anyhow, it was this big trash heap, and it had a face on it, and it would talk. I saw this lump of dirt, this pile of dirt, turn and look at me and smile. I said, okay, you know, you're really going to be driving.
Yeah, time to go home.
Well, I was on my way home. I was, like I said, it was the last 50 miles. And, you know, it's 10 miles further up the road because now I'm getting pretty close to home. You know, it's just almost a straight shot. And I would have sworn there was a Boeing 747 on the highway in front of me. To the point, I saw all the lights on the jet. I had to slow down, even though I know this is not really in front of me. It isn't there. It's not real. I couldn't drive 10 miles for years after that. I never drove any distance because I was just so paranoid about hallucinating or getting weird like that again. And I was, because I was way past too tired. I should not have been driving. But I saw that jet. I saw that hump of dirt with a face, you know.
No,
why did my brain do those things?
Some part of the brain woke up.
And really, what's to say that, you know, when we're experiencing or when people are seeing Bigfoot, when they're having UFO experiences, when they're seeing ghosts, what's to say that many of those experiences may not be of a similar nature?
Could you repeat that again?
Well, what's to say that, you know, when they experience seeing ghosts or when they experience UFOs or Bigfoot or anything else, you know, maybe those things really don't exist. In other words, maybe they're just constructs of our own mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're saying,
well,
you know, it was probably very, very real to you and you believed it. You know, in your inner soul, you knew that that was a 747 that flew. But it really wasn't. And
these were not real. I knew they weren't real. But at the same time, even though I knew cognitively that these were not real things,
they looked
I had
real.
To slow down for the. Yeah. My eyes keep telling me they're there, or whatever part of my brain is telling me that it's there, even though I know this is not real. I had to slow down so that I didn't hit it.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you know, the image just disappeared. You know, that was, you know, I knew it was a hallucination. You know, I don't know if everybody always knows when it's a hallucination. The other people would say, well, how do you know that was a hallucination? It might have really been there and you were in, you know, some time warp or whatever. You know, but I think it was a hallucination. That's what I thought at the time. That's, you know, the whole thing was a hallucination. I knew it wasn't real. You know, I've seen other weird things that my mind says, that was really there. You really saw that, even though you may not know what it was.
Right.
It was a real event. Sometimes I had, witnesses with me. Sometimes I didn't. But that particular incident, you know, my mind was saying, that's a hallucination. It's not real. You know it's not real. Why are you slowing down? And, you know, I'm having this whole conversation with myself. I'm slowing down because I don't think it's real, but what if it is?
That's the case.
Let's err on the side of caution because we're really tired. Yeah. But, like I said, I don't know if other people, realize when they're having a hallucination or, you know, do you realize every time that you're having a hallucination? I don't know.
Probably not.
But, you know.
Probably not.
I can remember my daughter hallucinating during a DKA episode. She's diabetic, and when she was initially diagnosed, she was very sick. And in fact, the morning that she ended up in the hospital, I called the doctor to say, she had me up all night hallucinating with silly stuff. And, that was very real to her.
Right. Well, it's like our dreams are real, real to us.
Yeah, and sometimes I've had some very strange ones.
Yeah, dreams can feel as real as your waking reality, and who's to say it's not a real reality that we're experiencing?
Yep.
Yeah, and can we alter our reality with changes of vibration? you know, some people are very, very lucky. Okay, well, I just did this fundraiser, and as part of the fundraiser, we did a number of raffles. There were probably half dozen people that won multiple items. They were exceptionally lucky. They didn't buy any more tickets than other people.
Yeah.
But people tend to frequently win. Now, there was no cheating going on because I'm standing there watching how everything's done. We've got some kid who doesn't know anybody doing the drawing. We you know, randomly chose this kid, you know, pulling the tickets out. There's no way that this could have been possibly altered by anybody. Why are some people more lucky than others?
Well, maybe they just vibrate at a more attractive level, so they attract more things of equal vibration to them.
It could be.
So, you know, because we have magnets.
Think about how magnets operate, you know? How, you know, plus and minus and the attractive forces of that, maybe it's very similar to that. Maybe, you know, our frequencies, our resonant frequencies can attract and repel like a magnet.
So you can change the polarity of a magnet.
Possibly.
What?
You can change the magnetic, you know, the polar magnet force. You can increase, you know, you can create a magnet. So you know, people who have bad luck obviously are greatly interested in how can they change their luck. You know, is there a possibility that through the exploration of vibration that they could find a way to readjust life for themselves?
You know, maybe it's not luck. Maybe it's just being more aware, vibrating at a higher level where you're more in the present moment. You're more aware of opportunities when they present themselves. And I certainly think through mood and emotion and thought, we can definitely either lower our vibration into depression, anxiety, you know, you name it, or raise it and feeling good and happy and purposeful. And that's something that we can do with our thoughts or anything that's going on in the brain. And if you're depressed, I think people around you can feel it, and then they kind of become a little down. It's contagious. But if you come into a room and you're on fire and you're feeling really great and you're really magnetic and charismatic, it's going to affect people.
Yeah.
So, I've seen some people, and, you know, I've watched them grow up. You know, a baby can be a rather unhappy, fretful baby, and they grow up to be an adult like that. Now, for the parents of a child like that, obviously, if you could readjust things for them so that they're not so negative, because I really think some people are just born with this negative cloud hanging over them.
Yeah,
because they're that way from infancy. Yeah, they're fretful, nervous babies, and they become negative children, and I can't be that, and you know, and so forth, and they grow up to be that way.
They're born with one side.
You know, so, you know, if you could change a child like that, you could make their life so much better, because I know some adults that the way they go through life, you'd swear that their sole hobby has to be sucking on lemons, because that's that's sour.
That's true. But sometimes, you know, I think if you're used to behaving that way, it just becomes habitual. You know, if you were a grumpy kid, you probably grew up to be a grumpy adult.
Yeah, but like I said, if you could readjust to their children, you know, make their life and those who have to live near them much nicer. Because, you know, it is. It's like some people are just born with this cloud of negativity clinging to them, and nothing we do seems to make anything better. Their glass is always half empty, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And others are always, their glass is half full. And it just, you know, I can't help but wonder why, you know, some people say, well, it's, you know, their astrological sign and it's when they were born, or, you know, it's genetics or it's this or it's that. But, you know, even in my own family, I can remember when we were kids, my brother was always a negative sort of child. And, you know, he had a hard time readjusting things as he became older. And it would have been so much easier if, you know, all you had to do was take them to a cabinet, put them in a box, and turn on a vibration, and voila.
Get him one of those
break
machines.
Break out the Sports Illustrated.
No. Hook him up to a machine.
That's what I'll send him for Christmas. Sports Illustrated, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, you know. That'll cure everything, Sports Illustrated.
Larry's making enemies out of sports fans everywhere.
For some reason, I have a feeling that most of Gia's listeners probably are not sports fans.
You mean paranormal-type people don't like sports?
I think for the most part, the demographic, you know, I think it's probably a very similar demographic to what we're in. I don't think for the most part they're sports fans.
Well, you know, I live in New Orleans, so I'm always happy when the Saints win, but I have
to admit,
the thought of sitting through a football game would be like, okay, dentist, gynecologist, or football game. Which one?
Yeah.
I love football. Oh, gosh. I love the strategy. I love all the plays. I like to predict the plays. But I know, I mean, I know the game inside out. And once you know it, it becomes really interesting, the strategies that they call and why they do some of the things they do. When I didn't understand it, I hated it.
Well, you know, I was an avid football fan when I was a kid, and I went to all the games, and my brother played football, and my cousin played football, and I never missed a game. And I haven't watched a game since I left high school, okay? I guess it became no fun when I didn't know anybody who was playing anymore.
Well, I
gamble. I mean, really knew them.
Or is that illegal, Larry? You didn't hear me?
Yeah.
No, it keeps cutting in and out really bad.
No, I said I gamble on football games. Is that illegal?
No.
I won't say what I gamble. Yeah, okay, you didn't hear.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm always happy when the Saints win, and that's a big deal here. And you know, I'm sure everybody with a hometown football team is the same way. But, you know, it doesn't mean that I'm going to be at the games. Same thing with baseball. We have a minor league baseball team here, and I'm always happy when they win, but, you know, just it's not, I guess it's just not my thing, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, we were talking about the vibrations of sound. New Orleans has got soil, our bedrock, it must be way, way down if it even exists. We're built on the Delta of the Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, when they build a building or whatever, they drive these piers way down in the soil to give the building stability.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, where I live is maybe 100 to 150 yards from one of the major streets in town. And when heavy trucks go down that street, I actually feel the dirt move under my feet. I mean, it's like jelly. You know, and so you wonder, yeah, how does all this sound affect the planet we live on? You know, all these vibrations. Is it going to, can vibrations be used to sort of release, like, the energy of an earthquake before we actually have an earthquake?
They tried that, and it hasn't worked. But that's tried that too with volcanoes, and I mean the Earth has its own resonant frequencies, and you know ancient civilizations used that knowledge to build their temples, and the pyramid supposedly has a frequency that matches the Earth's. And but geologically, the Earth is constantly sending out sound frequencies that we can't hear every time seismic activity. I don't know that we could change that. I mean, we could probably nuke a fault line, and it might cause something to happen. But, you know, I don't think I want them to try that. No.
Yeah. Let's not go nuke the San Andreas Fault. Just
no,
to see what happens.
Let it go on its own. But, yeah, I mean,
hey,
the Earth is constantly...
Actually,
go ahead.
Maria, that would make an awesome movie.
Oh, my God, Larry, let's do it. Why would you
really?
Nuke a fault line unless you're
exactly.
evil?
It would be some guy that
you're the mad scientist.
It would be somebody that was holding the U.S. hostage. You know, somebody that wanted like a $50 billion ransom, or else he was going to nuke the fault line.
Ah, I'll have to ask my dad about that. He's the expert. See if that would work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really don't think I want to go to California for that event, just to watch the filming of that particular movie. No.
I live here. I get to experience the real thing all the time.
You know, I lived in Arizona in the area we had an earthquake. I don't remember what it rated on the Richter scale. It broke a window in my house. Did something else. Knocked something off the shelf or something like that. I have to admit, okay, I happened to be on the phone threatening bodily harm to somebody who woke me up at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I didn't even notice. And yet it broke a window in the house and knocked some stuff down, and I found out about it the next morning. I guess I was just mad enough. My vibrational frequency was at a different rate than, you know, the Earth, and I didn't even notice.
I usually don't.
And most people did.
To notice them.
Yeah, like most people noticed it. Well, most people noticed it, and like I said, it broke a window. I know what it was. It cracked a wall is what it did. And, you know, at the same time, I didn't even notice. I heard about it the next day, and I went, well, gee, that's when I was on the phone. And, you know, so I know I was awake, so it wasn't the case that I was asleep and, you know, the bed cushioned the effect. I was actually standing up, and like I said, I was madder than a hornet because somebody called me, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning. And it was when we had the earthquake.
Yeah, the did you feel it phone call.
That's well, you know.
Did you feel it?
No, I didn't get a did you feel it when I got those the next day. Did you feel it? Did anything get knocked down at your house? What happened to your house? Yeah.
Yeah.
A number of people in the area had been woke up by it or had things rattle and shake. And I'm not a knick-knack sort of person, and so I didn't have anything like that to really, you know, shake, rattle, and roll. Some people had, you know, their china plates come off the wall, and I'm just not a china plate sort of person.
Yep.
So, you know, okay, I had a friend try to talk me into moving to California, 20-some years ago, and I actually looked at it, and one of the things I had to consider was San Andreas Fault. And as between the prices of rent compared to the prices of wages and the change in lifestyle and everything, I said, you're out of your ever loving mind. I may double my income, but I'll triple my outgo.
Well,
yeah,
if you live
right
near the fault line, you probably are better off because most of the more powerful waves impact away from the fault line. So...
I live in a major fault area. I mean, there's a huge fault that runs through Arkansas. And
I know it.
Get,
and you guys never said about that.
We get micro tremors all the time, but I've never felt anything. We've never experienced.
And your fault is overdue.
Arkansas.
You are overdue for a big one. So don't be teasing me now about the big one.
Well, we actually, believe it or not, I actually pay extra for the insurance for it. I mean,
earthquake
it's probably
insurance.
A complete waste of money, but I actually pay for earthquake insurance.
You know, when after Katrina, my family said, you know, you should move away from there. And I actually seriously considered it. And I got to think,
you
know.
Gee, you got more to worry about with water down there than you do probably anything else.
Well, you know, what I got to thinking was I've lived in the Upper Plains states where you had tornadoes, okay? You're lucky if you have 5 minutes warning. You're lucky, okay? I've lived, you know, in the Southwest, and we didn't have much going on there. But, you know, California, you've got all the earthquakes.
And fires now, too.
We had the fires in Arizona, too. And there were times when the smoke would be eye-stinging outside. And only through the blessings of air conditioning was indoors bearable. You know, you have blizzards and you have the monsoon storms and flash floods in the Southwest and so forth and so on. I said, you know, on the scale of things, hurricanes are bad, but I have at least 3 days warning they're coming
you
in.
Do. Yeah, you do. You have a lot of warning, a lot of time to get out.
Uh-huh.
So.
You know, and yeah, granted, like Gustav last year, it's coming in. We really didn't know which way it was going to go. Well, it happened to be over Labor Day weekend. Well, I'd already made plans that I was going to go visit a friend in Mississippi, and everybody thought I was nuts because I was going to be right on the coast. And I said, well, you know, really, it's not nuts, because if it's coming that way, I have many more choices of roads than I do in New Orleans. Because in New Orleans, we're limited by bridges. Everybody has to go through the bottleneck of the bridges to get out of town. And there, you know, there's lots of roads because it's all dry, pretty much dry land. And there's not as many bottlenecks, you might say. So I said, you know, if it's heading that way, then I can decide where I want to go from there. But at least I'm out of New Orleans.
Yeah.
And, you know, it turned out that it came this way, and I was fine, and there was very little flooding and very little happened at all there. Meanwhile, back in New Orleans, a tree landed on my house. And so it's a case of, I guess, you just have to weigh your odds and decide which risks you feel the most comfortable with.
Exactly. And which part of the country really resonates with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long have you been there?
In New Orleans, I've been here 6.5 years.
Hmm.
So.
Would you go anyplace else?
Do I go anyplace else? I travel every time. I love New Orleans, but do I regard it as a permanent home? Probably not. You know, we can go off on some paranormal things on you know, why a person chooses to leave and whatnot. But I don't regard it as a permanent home. This is just one of the stops on a wild train ride, you know. I spent most of my life in the southwestern United States. And
I like the southwest.
I love the desert.
I
love the canyon. Yep, my family is from New Mexico, and you know, it's always been where we all went for family powwows and whatnot.
I'm losing all my friends. They're all going to either Costa Rica or New Mexico. What a choice, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, we used to say Albuquerque was becoming little L.A.
Yeah,
because so many Californians were moving to Albuquerque. Santa Fe is beautiful. Taos is beautiful. Silver City is beautiful. Farmington's beautiful. I have to admit, you know, everybody talks about Roswell a lot. It's in the most boring part of New Mexico.
It's just a little.
But, you know, hey. It's a little dusty town.
People aren't going to that type of location really to see the scenery. They're going for a specific reason.
Yeah.
It's a destination.
It's claim to fame, the UFO claim to fame. So, yeah.
I mean, I don't think they've ever advertised it as, you know, being stunning natural
beauty. A great
beauty.
Place
it's
to live.
Desert. Yeah, exactly. It's just desert. Have you been on any of the, down in New Orleans, have you been on any of the haunted cemetery tours?
You know, I have to admit, I have not. I've not done the haunted tours. I recently had family here, and so we did a lot of different tours. But unfortunately, I had this fundraiser coming, so I was kind of restricted on how much time I dared goof off, because the fundraiser was actually held on Halloween. So the 2 weeks that they were, week and a half that they were here, was immediately prior to the event. And I goofed off, and I did go to and tour the Atchafalaya Basin. And anybody who's visiting Louisiana, you got to try that tour. It was so amazing. Okay, it was absolutely amazing.
What's it called?
The Atchafalaya. Well, actually, the tour group I went with was called. It has a website. It's the Atchafalaya Experience.com, I think is what it is. And great tour. They're great tour guides. They are infinitely patient with wanting to take pictures and whatnot. We went out. It was supposed to be a 3-hour tour. I think we were out 5 hours.
Wow.
Had a ball. And it was a wonderful tour. I intend to book with the same company in the spring. So you can't get a better reference than that. And I wanted to take you in the birth of this thing, you know. Yeah, because it's great for if you want to go out and see all the migratory birds that are nesting in the Atchafalaya swamp. That's great. You know, it was amazing. I learned more about the plants and animals in Louisiana on that one tour than I'd learned in the previous 6 years, you know.
So it was.
It's funny because I'm a desert rat. I'm not really crazy about water. Water's got monsters in it, you know, like alligators. All right. There's other monsters called sharks and salt water. Yeah. Water was a killer in Arizona because the flash floods come. You know, I've seen log jams 30 feet up in the air, and I know they retrieve hikers' bodies out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's 30 feet over my head. Water was a killer. You know, if you've ever gone scrambling frantically, vertically, as fast as you can, where you hear a train rushing towards you up the canyon, it's not a train, it's the water coming, and you better run. And, you know, when you there you are clinging to a canyon wall, and here comes the water wall, and it's like a wall. And I'm not kidding.
You know,
it's
people pay good
terrifying
money for that on some of the amusement parks.
Yeah.
It's not amusing in real life, okay?
When you're running from it for real, it's not very amusing.
When you're, that's a terrifying experience. And but it is, there's many, many beautiful things. Now, I have to admit, in Arizona, I never toured slot canyons. So the idea being down in one of those canyons that there is no escape from, just kind of...
Oh, I know. It's so big.
Gorgeous.
I was supposed to hike the Grand Canyon down to the bottom and stay down there for 3 nights, and I don't know. I get claustrophobic.
The Grand Canyon won't make
you
claustrophobic. It's huge.
No, Grand Canyon.
Down at the bottom, though, in pitch black and tents, I would be claustrophobic. Get me back up now. Because you can't go back up.
Where am I claustrophobic at? Oh, I think the worst experience for me was I had years and years ago when they first came out with MRI machines,
I had to have an MRI
scan of my brain.
The clothes.
That was probably the worst. And besides that, at that time I worked in law enforcement, and I'd just gone through an 8-hour training from the medical examiner's office. And so we've been looking at pictures of dead bodies in the morgue. All the drawers, okay? And I'm looking at this thing. She's got it pulled out, and it was the only machine in Arizona at the time, which tells you how long ago it was. And she's got this drawer thing pulled out, and she says for me to lay down on it. And she asked me if I want a towel to cover up my face. I'm like, oh, no. No, don't you dare hang anything off my toe.
Yeah.
And it was 45 minutes of laying still, and
that is torture.
Yeah.
It was absolute torture.
We ended up having to find one of those open MRIs for him because he couldn't do the standard MRI. He would freak out when he got into the normal closed tube MRI.
It was awful for me. It was a case of, you know, I just kept, because the worst part was you could feel your breath bouncing back. You know, because it was completely a closed tube. It was literally a tube that slid me into.
Right.
And as you breathed out, you could feel your own breath bouncing back in your face.
Right.
You experienced extreme magnetic resonance during that. That's how those MRI machines work.
Yeah,
so
that
you actually
some resonance.
Did experience a positive aspect of resonance yourself.
Well, you know, even though that medically, I suppose it was quite positive, in terms of my enjoyment level, it was really negative.
They should come with little DVDs at the top that you can watch while you're lying in there. You know, that might help.
Yeah.
Got all sorts of things now, but at that time, it was real basic, you know. And I had to have an MRI done, I guess, about 10 years ago on my knee. They said MRI, and I immediately clench up, you know, and I'm thinking, no. And it was a machine in the orthopedic surgeon's office. I sat in a chair. They just put this thing around my leg, and they did the MRE.
Yeah.
Just my leg.
They just needed your leg.
And it was like, whoa. Yeah, because I was thinking, 45 minutes just do my head. How long is it going to take to do a knee? You know?
Now it's time to progress to the open MRIs.
Yeah, I've seen the open MRIs. A lot of people's insurance still doesn't cover the open MRI, I know a lot of people ask for a tranquilizer for it. Yeah, knock me out and it'll be just fine. But you know what? We have are running low on time. So before we go.
Oh, wow. Time.
We've been chatting about everything. and anything.
Well, the thing is that actually when you think about it, that resonance bit does, it pervades our entire life.
It absolutely does.
We've got the vibrations from the electrical fields that make up our electrical systems in our house surrounding us every minute of the day.
Yeah.
You go into your office building, you've got fluorescent lights overhead with their particular vibration, and some of us can hear them. You've got televisions with their vibration, radios with theirs. We are surrounded.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, completely surrounded continually. And if we're Amish, we're not listening to this program tonight, and therefore we wouldn't know.
Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah, it's everywhere. And, you know, it does pervade every particular part of our life. So, real quick, give your website.
It's www.paraexplorers.com. You can learn more about Larry's group, RPAST, at rpast.org. And my personal site is mariedjones.com. But they're pretty much all interconnected. So,
okay.
A lot of good stuff.
Well, I want to thank both you, Marie, and Larry, for joining us tonight and being such fantastic guests.
Yes, even with all our technology issues, we had a good time.
Yes.
Yeah, really have a good time. I've enjoyed the program tonight. I hope all of the audience has as well. And I hope that it provided you plenty of food for thought and more illumination for your personal journey towards truth. Join us again next week as we bring you another fascinating episode of The Dawn of Shades. With that, we are out of time. I'm your host, Gia Scott. And